Welcome to Future CEOs. Welcome to all of you. It's really, really good to have you. We are winding down. It's the last session here at LeaderX 2015. How are you feeling about this session? We didn't think we could get better, but it looks like we've done it.
And I truly believe that we've saved the best for last. So high expectations, but it's been one of the best days of my Future CEO life. Let me tell you that.
I'm very, very pleased to hear that. A long day, but the best. We must thank our sponsors very quickly because they are the people that have made this happen. Accenture, thank you, William.
No, really.
So Accenture, thank you very much. Mercedes-Benz as well, that's their sexy car back there. Thank you to Mercedes-Benz. We also need to thank Contemporary Events. That's why the stand looks as good as it does.
And then slick and sexy.
Yeah, slick and sexy. And then finally, Cliff Central, our family. That's the business side of it all done. We have some incredible leaders here. Shall we start with the rose? Vanita, please, tell everyone who you are, please.
I'm a retired banker, having finished off leading the retail bank of Absa at the end of 2010. Since then, I've started up my own management consulting firm, and I sit on quite a few boards, and that's what keeps me busy at this stage.
That's a very humble answer. There's a list of boards about that long, right? And that's with a small font like that. Welcome, and we're very grateful to have you. William, please tell everyone who you are and why they should be listening to you.
Well, thank you. I am with Accenture, and I've been with Accenture 16 years now, and I think the last 10 now as the CEO of Accenture here in South Africa, and I must say now from the 1st of September, my portfolio spans sub-Saharan Africa.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Sure.
Phenomenal. Well, we're very grateful to have you as well. And then last but certainly not least, and I understand that you guys are the headline sponsors of LeaderX as well. Thank you very much for doing that. We really appreciate it. Shamil, who are you?
Well, firstly, I don't think you define yourself by your job, but I'm the CEO of Vodacom. I've been the group CEO for the last 3 years. Before that, I was the CEO of Vodafone Spain. I've been with Vodacom for 21 years.
Sure.
I've been managing director for the last, in different companies in the group, for the last 17 years.
All right. We really do have
heavy weights.
Big wigs in the room.
Wisdom, wealth, expertise. You know, there's a lot to learn. Hence our topic.
What have I learned? And it's not what I've learned. It's what you guys have learned along your journey. Mm. Remember, please, everyone, put your hands up if you want to ask a question. There will be a roaming mic. We'll be able to ask your questions. Please don't ask for business. maybe after.
After.
Okay, let's just jump straight into that question. And perhaps we can phrase it in a question we always love to ask everyone. What do CEOs actually do? What do CEOs actually do?
I think we should start with the group CEO of Vodacom.
I think that's changed a lot over the years. You know, I think when we were growing up, and even when I started in business, we've always had this image of the CEO playing golf and, you know, just delegating everything. And
William laughs.
And to a large degree, my children.
That's why I followed the path. And when I arrived there, there's no more playing golf.
What
is this all about?
And my kids still think that's all I do. They think I just give orders and do nothing the whole day. I said, Dad, you actually got quite an easy job. But actually, I think it's evolved a lot. And today's CEO is very much, what you're looking for is a lot more operational. So you're looking for the operational intensity, which I think wasn't there in the past. Not that you didn't have good CEOs in the past, I think it was just a different era. And now it's a lot more hands-on, and a lot more is expected from you. So I think it's a lot tougher and a lot more draining and intense, if you like. But you know, it's quite intense in terms of the volume that's required.
Okay, so we're hearing operationally intense. Thoughts, William?
Yeah, it has quite a lot of operational intensity in it. And also, business by business, this differs, right? So I'm in management consulting and technology and some digital stuff and outsourcing. So for us, it's about how we serve our clients every day and how we create that customer experience and how I can set the tone at the top for the entire organization to be able to follow the path on how we can delight our customers. And it's quite an intense as Shamil says, it's a very intense kind of work because it requires that every moment of truth you have with your clients, it's a memorable one. We can't have any fault lines in the system. And so the tone has to be set from the top, and that's where the intensity comes in. So you also have to understand operationally where your business is going, and you have to strategically be aligned with where the market and your clients are wishing you to go. And in our business, being an IP-intensive business, so you need to also be sharp in terms of, thought-provoking conversations and knowing what's happening in the industries and so on and so forth.
Okay, I mean, I guess the world is changing so rapidly all the time that you have to be hands-on. You have to know where the world is going. You've spoken about strategy. Add something to the
mix, please. Yes, I really want to. I'm not taking away anything of what my colleagues have just said. I want to just add on to say that I have a different definition of a CEO. Everything you said, plus I believe a CEO is a chief encouragement officer.
Okay.
Love that.
Because for me, it's about people. I believe if you have not got your people with you, it doesn't matter how bright you may be and how great your opportunities and your market share may be. If you don't take your people with you, you're going to lose. That's the first thing. Secondly, I also just want to add on, Shamil, you know, it's still, was it you, William, just said that your children still believe that's all you do. So golf is still being played. So for the ladies in the room, if you are CEOs, it's okay. I've got news for you. I sat at Exco of APSA where the guys played golf. They really did, and they enjoyed it. I never did play golf because I didn't believe that as a woman I needed to take on the male persona to survive. Mm. What I did, however, do, I was never going to rain on their parades. I always just made sure that wherever they played golf, that there was a good spa right there.
Absolutely. Give it here.
From the moment they walked in and they started off on, you know, their first hole, I was in there. And, I mean, sometimes by the time I had my full treatment, top to bottom, they were still out there. I just said, let's do round two. So, ladies, we work within a system.
Love it.
Okay.
Well, thank you for balancing that out.
Thank you. Very important.
Let's put ourselves into a future CEO's shoes. Young, dynamic, high potential, wanting to move and to do things. I think there may be a mismatch in terms of the reality on the expectation that a young person needs to have if they want to reach the top. What happens when you make that decision? What should you be doing? Shamil, what are your thoughts?
I think firstly, you've got to take the necessary steps and move your own vehicle forward, as I like to put it. And what I mean by that is you've got to take all the learning opportunities that presents itself.
Mm.
So in terms of your studies, take doing an MBA, giving yourself what I call the ticket to the game. So I think that's extremely important on the one side. I think it's always important to have ambition, but also to be passionate about what you're doing. And for me, what I look at is, and when we're looking at young, aspiring leaders, what you're looking at is firstly their ability to lead on the one side and lead teams of people. Secondly, I would say is passion. They've got to be passionate about what they're doing. Hard work and drive, I think, is extremely important as well. Decisiveness and leadership qualities in terms of how decisive you can be. And then lastly, for me, if you're given a particular role, what I found in my career certainly was that I always took the stance of saying, let me make it bigger and better than what anyone envisaged. So if you were asked to do X, I think you should do X, Y, and Z.
Okay.
And you've got to push that boundaries as far and as wide as you can and make it bigger and better. And those are the people that stand out and are the future leaders.
Okay. I heard once somebody say, under promise and over deliver.
Yep.
You like
always
that?
Important.
Benita, your thoughts?
Exactly right. I just think that today's young people who are aspiring to get to the top have got an additional challenge which maybe we didn't have, certainly not in my time, that there are so many opportunities. And, you know, a definition for me of real talent, latent talent, is somebody with headroom, somebody who's got the ability to grow, but somebody with runway, which means that they're not just going to jump at the next job that comes up. Because very often what you find is you've got somebody who's really got a great career path set in a particular organization, but they so easily get seduced by another 100,000, 200,000, just because somebody else needs to tick another box. And they trade their very opportunity just for that small amount of money. So for me, it's a combination of the headroom, which talent does need to have, but staying the course and ensuring you're in a good environment that's going to give you the opportunities that Shamil spoke of. And, you know, to stand out, to do what everybody else is doing, but do the more.
Mm.
I used to always say to young people working for me, you know, how do you stand out in a crowd? How do you make yourself stand out in the crowd? Nobody can do that but you. So today's young people who's aspiring to get to the top has got a lot of clutter. And the clutter that's coming at them is all the opportunities. And it's then being able to determine and decipher which are the right opportunities that will get you to the top of the pile.
Okay, so every decision counts. Every decision Absolutely. Has a knock-on effect. Okay, very, very Absolutely. Nice. William?
Look, I would say that what Shamil and Vanita said is absolutely spot on. You need someone with a staying power because it's a journey. No one is going to entrust you with their business if they don't feel you have the passion and you have the staying power. And that you have prepared yourself along the way to be ready for this kind of a step up. So I would say that it starts by you making it quite a deliberate act of wanting to craft this path for yourself. And then doing all the things that need to be done, like leadership, passion, delivering excellence, and of course, staying the course. And then making sure that as and when you're doing that, you're saying, you know, under promise, over deliver. In our environment is high performance all the way. You have to set yourself very aspirational goals, and people would like to see you achieving those high aspirational goals.
Okay.
And then they know that this is a person with a staying power, and they've prepared themselves enough because they are curious enough to want to learn all the time, that this is a person we can entrust our business to, and they will do a good job. And it speaks to something that I found and I have learned over the years, for me at least, humility. I find that a lot of people, you know, if you haven't been able to get that right mix of humility, you either come out as someone who is too big for the organization, and that's ego.
Sure.
And some organizations don't really thrive very well with very egotistical people. I think in some environments you need the ego, but, you know, generally, for big corporates, you need to be able to, you know, to keep your ego in check. So, which means you must still be very confident in how you're going about your things, know your stuff, but the humility keeps you grounded and keeps you in check. And then you are able to reduce that aspect which people could think that this person thinks that they're bigger than the organization. Because as soon as you get to that point, no one really wants to entrust the business with you because you're going to just kill it.
You've used the word three times, entrust. There's a lot in that word, entrust, entrust.
Vanita, what is a mistake that you made early in your senior position, and what did you learn from that mistake or that experience?
I think the one that stands out for me is coming into a role as a senior executive and quickly wanting, you come in before you even have had a chance, your first 90 or your first 100 days. You're in there with a shot. You're going to change everybody. The furniture's out. Your new furniture's in. And you unravel the whole plan.
With him, you're smiling.
Because, I mean, that's probably the biggest mistake that I made. Because in between the people that I exited were actually the knowledge anchors that could have gotten me to deliver on a better result a lot sooner. Fortunately, I had picked up on the error of my ways, and I quickly was big enough to say, that was a mistake. Let me correct it. But I think for aspiring on young CEOs is to say, take the time to find out what you have. Because in between there, you could have pearls and absolute gems that's going to give you or drive you to success. Rather than coming in with a preconceived agenda, cleaning up house, and finding out that you've thrown out the baby with the bathwater. That was certainly the biggest mistake I made.
Shamil?
Mine's the reverse. Not acting quick enough. Which is in the first 90 days, knowing who the doers are, who the talkers are, and who the consultants are. Sorry, William.
You always need consultants.
No, you do, always, you do. Always. But you don't want them working for you.
Shamil 1, William, you better come back, 0.
No, I mean, there's in strategy and so on, you need people who can think and who can provide that. But you also need people. For me, there's people who can tell you what's wrong with the world and have no idea how to fix it. That for me is problematic. And you also find out your biggest mistake sometimes is that you point people or you have people that you inherit and you wait too long. And you don't make the call that you should have made. And then months later, you realize that actually that person doesn't have the capability to do that role. And you want to kick yourself because you should have done that a lot earlier. Mm-hmm. So you've lost 4, 5, 6 months sometimes. And sometimes it can even go on for years. And I think that's where you've got to be decisive in terms of, I think the most important thing is to surround yourself with the right people with the right qualities. Because no one's an island. You need your team has to be fully operational. And so I think sometimes you wait too long. And that's the mistake you sometimes make. Because you also get caught up a little bit in emotion. People have been there a long time. Mm-hmm. You like the person, you know, and so on. And sometimes they can be in the organization for 15, 20 years and they've been very, very effective. But they've run out of steam or they've lost the passion. And when that happens, I think it's time to call it a day.
Mm-hmm. My mistake was exactly what you talked about, right? Especially when you're growing in the organization, because as you grow in the organization, there are people that you grow looking up to. And you get to a point where now you are the chief and you're reviewing the situation and you think, actually, this guy is kind of like part of the furniture, or this person is kind of like part of the furniture, you know, and you're not quite too sure what to do with them. I think for me, the most important thing is just having the courage to say, the strategy I'm driving goes this direction. The talent I need is this type of talent. And this talent that has been with the organization for X number of years ain't relevant anymore. Got to make the change. And have the courage to just get on and get it done. That way, obviously with the humility, as I said. But you got to spot it on quite quickly and be able to deal with it. It took me like a year. I took a year just assessing and just trying to figure out, you know, where the draft is going and where the path of least resistance is and everything else. Fortunately, the business was on a good footing, so there was no reason to rush. But when I look back, there are things I could have done in that year that could have set the business in a different course of direction much earlier. You know, so fortunately, there wasn't really a platform that was burning that needed me to act as swiftly as I would have liked to act. But I do realize after some time that, you know what, I left certain things to fester for a long time.
Phoebe, I guess what we are hearing here, and it's so important, is that mistakes are allowed. I think too many of us, we don't allow ourselves to make mistakes, and sometimes are worried that if we make a mistake in a corporate environment, that's our heads on the chopping block. I guess the cornerstone of that is just good relationships and good communication. I do remember my question. Here it is. Please put yourself in, again, a future CEO's shoes. He's working hard. He's got that dedication that we spoke about. He has that passion, or she, but the person that they are reporting to doesn't allow room for growth, is taking some of the glory or the praise. What does that person do? There we go, there we go. Do I hear, is there an amen in the... Okay, we want this question. By the way, please, guys, we want your questions. Please, please. Okay, I've got a question coming up. All right, we'll get you the mic. There's the question. What do you do with a manager or someone above you that is stopping you from shining?
Look, I think it's always difficult. If you really see that someone's a blocker and you're really not getting anywhere, then I think you've got to seriously consider changing roles and so on. But more importantly, I think you also got to be so good at what you're doing that you do stand out. And what will happen is, if you're really doing a really great job, it will come, you do end up shining out. And organizations that have that will and be able to recognize that talent. But there is times, and one has to accept it, that there is times that you will have a situation where you have a blocker and so on. So you either change departments if you believe in the organization, and maybe excel somewhere else, you know, or else change roles. If your potential is not being realized, I think one of the worst things is sitting too long in a place where you, and it's holding you back. But I also think you've got to make yourself heard. And I'll give you an example. When I joined Vodacom after 3 months, I actually went to them, and I mean, it might sound a little bit arrogant, but it wasn't. I'd done 5 years of articles, and I actually found that the role that I was doing was too mediocre for what I'd been taught. And I thought, so I actually went to them. I said, you know what, I'm a lot more intelligent than this. Why don't you give me something more clever to do? You know, and I actually did. You know, and I had to change roles. I had to actually change roles. It was probably the best move that I made in my career, because from there it just flourished. So, you know, you can get stuck and you can realize that very early on. And I think if you're not, like, if it's not using your full potential, you've got to also push. and you've got to ask for more, and you've got to take on more, you know, to be able to get somewhere.
I like that point. Ask for more.
Absolutely.
Can I just build on that? It's very easy, you know. I find many people, and I think I was guilty of this for many years. You sit there and you are so unhappy because nobody's seeing you. I mean, the Bible tells you have not because you ask not. So you've got to be brave enough to, if you believe in yourself and your boss just happens not to see it, to go and make it heard. Make people know that I believe I can do more. But obviously you're putting yourself out there, because if you really cannot do more, you'll be terribly exposed.
Yeah.
Okay? But I think your first step in pushing you is you got to do it. But too many times people want other people to see it, but they're not prepared to put themselves out there and say, listen, I'm over here and I want more. So just taking courage.
I think about the conversation we had this morning, and this is exactly it. You need to package yourself and you need to communicate it. Gone are the days where you can just sit there and expect people to look and see. Yeah. They're so focused, I guess.
Look, I mean, there's many schools of thought about this, right? And sometimes it's got some cultural nuances in it. But I would say that the common thing that I found is that if your immediate boss doesn't necessarily see your potential, if you really have coaches and mentors in the business, they will make sure that in places where your boss can't speak for you, they can speak for you.
Okay.
So I really encourage everybody to try and have coaches and mentors. And those aren't necessarily your immediate boss. They need to be people spread out in the business. Mm. So those are the people that when you can't express your voice and somebody else is looking for someone to tap on the shoulder, they can say, hey, have you heard what William has been doing?
Mm.
Or have you seen that guy in that little corner, that corner there that we've put there and forgotten about? You know, he did this and that and that. They're able to speak for you. So that's another way of making sure that you've got more than just one person you are putting your entire career on in terms of advancement.
Very nice.
And that I find to be working extremely well.
That's very nice. Very, very good point. Thank you. Shall we go to your question?
Yeah.
Please stand up, introduce yourself, and then let's hear your question.
Shane from Letsema. Two possible questions, one for maybe the management consultant and one for Shamil. Start with Shamil first. For large organizations, I think strategy is very important, and I think it's difficult to manage strategy and execute it for a large employee base. So how important do you think it is, and how effectively do you think you run it within Vodacom?
Which is like a big ship, right?
Yeah. That's how do you maneuver a big ship from a strategy point of view and execute it down right to the bottommost level, probably the drivers and the cleaners of the company? And for the management consultant, I'm a management consultant myself, but how do you continue to add value in what you do, and how do you keep clients like Shami happy?
Sure.
Thank you.
Look, I think there's two different types of strategies for me. One is operational strategy, where effectively it's an evolution of where you are and improving on that. And that, for me, is more bottoms up, where effectively you're seeing and expanding how can you do what you're doing better, smarter, quicker, faster, and obviously generate more revenue in the process. But then there's also big bets, and the strategic big bets, and you have to have people that can actually help you to look beyond the horizon. What lays beyond? What exactly should you be looking at, and where should you be willing to play? And I think organizations that can do that and can see ahead are basically able to capture those opportunities. I mean, look, to be honest, there's always room for improvement in any organization, but I think in Vodacom we've actually executed on that pretty well for two reasons. One is being part of a multinational does help, because you get pushed on certain things, and I think that's important. And sometimes, you know, if there's cost problems in Europe, they're forcing you to have a cost program, which sets you in good stead. But also, having gone there and experienced it, you know what the future looks like. So the time away in Spain, and that also helped to see what the world looks like in another lens. And then you come back and say, okay, I better not do certain of those things, and I better capture some of these opportunities ahead of time. But there's certain big strategic moves that you've got to take. As an example would be the Neotel transaction. The Neotel transaction for us is wanting to go play in a new space. Fixed is becoming a big part of the future of telecoms, and data explosion. So having both connectivity in the home, in the business, and through the mobile is extremely important. So it's that converged offering. And part of that will be TV in the future. So you start to make bets, you know, in those different places. And you've also got to be bold and also have patience. So example, you start a TV business, you must accept that you're going to lose money. But there's a future that's looming. And that's a full converged offer that will inevitably come. So I think it's just taking some of those big strategic decisions. but also taking some bold decisions. As an example, different organizations, they act differently. Last year, we had a big issue with mobile termination rates being cut. The way we responded versus our competitors responded. Some cut their CapEx and their capital investment. We speeded up the capital investment. You know, so those kind of things, because we realized that, look, if you want to get out of the hole, you've got to put more in. And that takes a lot of courage. So you've got to also have the courage with those decisions. So I think it's important to think things through and then make the right strategic moves that prepare you better for the future.
Does that satisfy your strategy question?
I think what you've got to do is create the clear strategy, then make sure that you've broken it down into focus and targets for people and so on, so that you can make sure that they're delivering on it. And you've got to align your organization behind those targets, behind those goals, and make it clear that everyone understands the path that you're on and what you need to achieve and your role in being able to deliver it. And you're also going to break it down into different strategies. As an example, we have a data strategy. Are we growing data revenues by 35%? But to be able to do that, you've got to invest in the network. So your network people have to be able to build out that coverage, that with the speed, the complexity, and so on, ahead of time. So you've got to break it down into what they've got to deliver. You've got to make sure the product people are creating the products that will drive the uptake of those new areas that are being connected, content, so people start to use more data, all of these type of things. You've got to have a content strategy. So there's different building blocks which has to come together, but different people in the organization will have to deliver on that for that strategy to work.
The question for Bud William.
For us as a management consultant, it starts with having the right talent. We have to have the talent that is curious and inquisitive enough, always wanting to know that tomorrow is a different day and you always have to be at your best. So effectively, we thrive because we hire people that are by themselves high performers. Mm. So they always want to push themselves, knowing very well that this is what our clients expect. This is what they buy from us. They buy the fact that we can come with a different angle, or we can come with a different thought process from the process that they would have been embarking on internally. That we have got some tools and some tricks and some things that we have developed over the years and learnings and experiences that can help accelerate the path to the achievement of the strategies that they have set out. So that's really what our clients buy from us. And the moment of truth is when our people are able to articulate it and be able to help our clients achieve their objectives. And they have to stay sharp all the time in terms of learning new things and improving themselves, unlearning the old and learning the new. Mm. I mean, we have this digital disruption taking place today. Our clients want to hear from us in terms of what does it mean for them. It means we must have immersed ourselves into the digital disruption way before they even begin to think about it. So we always have to be operating on the cutting edge of things stay relevant to what our clients are looking at from us.
By the way, William is Mr. Innovation.
Love that.
Just so you know, he is Mr. Innovation.
Two steps ahead.
You've got a question.
All right. Hi, I'm Conrad from Siemens. Shamil, I've got it's basically a double barrel question. My first part of the question is, I can relate to your doing your article saying that you got impatient and you wanted to do more. How did you control your patience for not progressing as fast as you might have wanted to? Okay, and then a question for the open forum for you guys in general. Was there any decision in your career that you think, if you look back on it, that would have actually realized in career suicide that you would not be sitting here today in the position you are in today?
Nice questions. Thank you.
Love
Thank
it.
You. Okay, so for me, I think the big thing is it's you got to take it on yourself. Okay, and you basically got to take that role and push it. And you're going to ask for more, and you're going to push for more, and you're going to make it bigger and better than what anyone envisaged. And for me, that's always been key. You got to try and push the boundaries. And I think your people that really excel do that. They push the boundaries and they make it more. And to the extent that it's not happening, I think you got to call it. I think you got to call it, and you got to say, look, let me move to a different department. And in my case, it did happen. But it happened within the first, 6 months of me being at Vodacom. I said, look, I can do more. And it actually meant moving from the Pretoria office to the Sandton office, where head office was at the time, to be able to make that move. So sometimes, you've got to be impatient yourself to want to get somewhere, to want to make it being more. And I think a lot of people just kind of settle. And once you settle and you're just kind of drifting through life, and you lose that passion for what you're doing and it just becomes a job, then leave. If you don't find that fire in your belly and you're not excited to go to work, then you're in the wrong job. Go to some company that's going to give you that excitement again.
I would like to test it. I don't think we have the courage in the room. I don't know if we do. How many of you feel like you're drifting in your careers or jobs? Actually, you don't have to put your hands up, but if you've got courage like that young lady over there, then what did you just hear? Leave. There's the answer. Get out and go somewhere else. Thank you, Shimran. Thank you for that.
No, I can't believe that conversation was cut short. But once again, it's testimony that as a person, we don't have to go through the same mistakes that our icons, that our models, that our role models, mentors, or coaches have done in the past.
Yes, we do apologize. Unfortunately, technical problems do happen. Unfortunately, in this case, it happened at the worst possible time. So we are sorry, but we are certainly very, very grateful for the insights that we have heard from them. And we know we will be engaging them in the future. So watch this space. Keep on listening. And future CEOs will bring more top CEOs to you right here on Cliff Central and more.